who are working here and meditating under your instruction, and I'd like to join them. Well, maybe, but strictly on probation. And then, of course, all the details are taken. And he pays a ridiculously small fee, in modern Japan at any rate, to be able to stay in the monastery. It's very, very inexpensive. Now the teacher comes back and says, now you want to study Zen. Why? Well, because I'm oppressed by the rounds of birth and death, in other words, by the vicious circles of life in which I find myself, by suffering, by pain, and so on, and I want to be emancipated. The teacher says, who is it that wants to be emancipated? Well, that's a stopper. There was a good old story about one of these preliminary interviews. The master asks, first of all, very casual questions. Where's your hometown? What's your name? What did your father do? And where did you go to college? Why is my hand so much like the Buddha's hand? And suddenly, you know, in midstream of an ordinary conversation, clunk, the student is blocked. And so there is devised the koan, K-O-A-N in Chinese, kung'an. And this means, literally, the word koan means a case, in exactly the same sense as we talk about a case in law which functions as a precedent for future cases. Koan should be translated case. The koans are based on stories, mondo, of the conversations between the old masters and their students. But you can make a koan immediately by such a question, why is my hand so much like the Buddha's hand? Or, who are you that asked this question? If the student tries to verbalize on that and say, well, I am so-and-so, he asks, who knows that you're so-and-so? How do you know that you know? Who knows that you know? Find out. In other words, the basic koan is always, who are you? Who is it that wants to escape from birth and death? And I won't take words for an answer. I want to see you. And all you are showing me at the moment is your mask. So then the student is sent back to the monk's quarters, the Sodo. And the chief of the Sodo is called the Jikijitsu, is then put in charge of him. And he teaches him how to behave, what the rules are, how to eat, and how to meditate. In the Zen sect, they sit on padded cushion, about the thickness of the San Francisco telephone directory, which is an admirable substitute. And then, with crossed legs in the lotus posture, with the feet resting on the thighs, like you always see a Buddha, they sit for half-hour periods. That's supposed to be the length of time it takes for a stick of incense to burn. And then, when wooden clappers are knocked together, they all get up, and they walk round and round the room quite fast, at a kind of bum, 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 pace. And this keeps you awake. Then, at a given signal, they go back and meditate again. And constantly there is a monk, one on each side, carries a long, flat stick shaped almost like this fan, in the sense that it's thin at one end and rounded at the other. And if this guy sees a monk who is slouching or sleeping or goofing off in some way, he very respectfully bows before him, and the monk rests his head on his knees, and this fellow takes the stick and hits him vigorously on the shoulders, here, like this. Now, most apologists for Zen say, this is not punishment, it's simply to keep you awake. Don't you believe it? I've investigated this, And it's the same as the sort of British boys' school, only it doesn't have the erotic qualities that the British floggings do. Zen people are cool about it. But it is a kind of a fierce thing. Anyway, the point of the meditation, the Zazen, is that perhaps at the beginning one does nothing more than count your breathing. So many breaths in counting in tens. Just to allow your thoughts to become still. Zen people do not close their eyes when they meditate, nor do they close their ears. They keep their eyes on the floor in front of them, and they don't try to force away any sounds that are going on, or any smell, or any sensation, whatever. Only they don't think about it. And this can become an extraordinarily pleasant occupation. All the little sounds of distant traffic, of birds, of somebody carpentering somewhere and a hammer going, dog barking, or especially rain on the roof. Gorgeous. They don't block that out. But as time goes on, instead of counting breathing, they devote themselves to the koan problem, which the Roshi has assigned. What is the sound of one hand? Who were you before your father and mother conceived you? When Joshu was asked, does a dog have Buddha nature? He replied, no. What is the meaning of no or mu? All sorts of these problems. And so as time goes on, every day the student goes to the teacher for what is called sanzen. Sanzen means studying Zen. And he has to present a satisfactory answer to the koan. Now, sanzen is the moment in the monastery when no holds are barred. Although there's a very formal approach to it. The monk has to stop outside the master's quarters and make this mokugyo. He does that three times. And at a signal from the master, which is ringing a bell in reply, he goes in and sits down in front of the master and bows right down to the floor, and then sits up, and he repeats the koan that he's been given, and he's supposed to answer it. Now the master, if he's not satisfied with the answer, may simply ring his bell, which means interview over, nothing doing. Or if he's still not satisfied, he may try to do something to hint the student as to which way to go, or puzzle him further, some sort of comment. But what happens is this. Do you see what kind of a situation has been set up here? The student is really being asked to be absolutely genuine. So if I said to you, now don't be self-conscious. I want you to be perfectly sincere. And as a matter of fact, I'm a mind reader. And I know whether you're being sincere or not. I can see right down to that last little wiggly guzzle in the back of your mind. And if you think I can, you see, I'm putting you in a double bind. I'm commanding you to be genuine. How can you possibly do that on command? Especially when the person you're confronted with is a father figure, an authority figure. And in Japan, the sensei, the teacher, is even a more authoritative figure than one's father, which is saying a lot. But you are being asked in the presence of this tiger to be completely spontaneous. Or it isn't put in that way, you see, though. I mean, I'm describing this from the standpoint of a psychologist observing what's going on here. No, the thing you've got to do is you've got to hear the sound of one hand. And as your answers become more and more rejected, you get more and more desperate. And there is built up the state that is called the great doubt. The students do everything, you know. They've read all the old Zen stories, and they come in with pieces of rock and wood, and they try and hit the teacher. They do everything they get. Nothing will do. I remember I had a friend studying in Kyoto, and on the way to the master's quarters, who passed through a lovely garden with a pool, and he saw a bullfrog in the garden. And he grabbed this bullfrog, they're very tame in Japan, nobody eats them, and put it in the sleeve of his kimono. And when he got in to give an answer to his koan, he produced the bullfrog. And the master shook his head and said, mm-mm, too intellectual. Of course, he meant not so much what we mean by intellectual, but too contrived, too premeditated. You know, you're just copying other people's Zen antics, and that's something you just can't get away with. Well, there does come a critical point of total desperation. And when the student reaches that point, the teacher really starts encouraging him. He says, now, come on, you're getting warm, but you must die, be ready to die for this. You must, students have even been put under into the position that if they don't get it in so many days, they're going to commit suicide. And they have to stimulate this intense period, a thing called obsession. Don't confuse the word session with the English session. Session means studying or observation of the shin, the heart, the mind, the heart-mind. And at this time, they only sleep 4 hours a night. And they meditate solidly all through the day. They go for the Sanzen interview twice a day, every one of them. And it's a tremendous workout and will last about 5 days, 5 or 6 days. And in that period, the pressure is really on. Everybody is worked into a pitch of this kind of psychic fury that they have to get this thing answered. There's a man in Japan today who has a 5 day Zen system, and he practically guarantees that you will have Satori in his 5 days. I've just got a book about it written by a Britisher. I haven't had a chance to read it yet. Well, I had someone I knew of who was over studying Zen on a Fulbright grant, and the grant was winding up, and he still hadn't got the sound of one hand. He said to the master, look, a grant's running out and I can't stay here. And I've just got to get this thing. So just the day before he left, he suddenly realized that there was nothing to realize. And that was it. You know, here he had spent his whole life thinking that there's something deficient in me. See, there's something wrong. Something I ought to find out to get this problem of life cleaned up. Well, you know what you do. Rinzai, the old Chinese master, said, Zen teaching is like using an empty fist to deceive a child. Or like trying to stop a child crying by giving it a yellow leaf. See, the child wants gold, And so you give it an autumn leaf and say, dear darling, there's some gold. Be all right. Or with your closed fist, you say, what have I got here? The child comes and tries to see and pull your fingers open, then you hide it behind your back and under your leg and behind the chair. Child gets absolutely fascinated. The longer you keep this up, the more the child is sure there's something real goody inside the hand. And then at the end, pssst, nothing. And that's Zen. So there comes the time, you see, when the student can go in front of the master and not give a damn. Because he sees, he's seen the point. There wasn't a problem. He made up the problem himself. He came and projected it on this master, who knew how to handle that kind of person, by making him much more stupid than he was before. Until he sees the essential stupidity of the human situation where we are playing a game of one-upmanship on other people and on the universe. How to get the better of life? Well, what makes you think you're separate from life so that you can get the better of it? How can you beat the game? What game? Or who will beat it? This illusion of beating the game, of finding the thing out, of catching it by the tail, is therefore dissipated by the technique of the koan. It's called, working on a koan is like a mosquito biting an iron bull. It's the nature of the mosquito to bite. It's the nature of an iron bull to be unbitten. Or they say it's like swallowing a ball of molten lead. You can't swallow it down. You can't cough it up. You can't get rid of this thing. That's the great doubt, you see. But this is an exaggerated form of what everybody is ordinarily trying to do to beat the game. So at that moment, the student has heard the sound of one hand, or discovered who he was before father and mother conceived him, or what no means. So the teacher says, good. Now, you have found the frontier gate to Zen. You've put your foot in at the door, and you're across the threshold. But there's a long way to go. And now you have found this priceless thing out, you must redouble your efforts. So he gives him another koan. Now the student may be able to answer that one instantly, because it's simply a test koan. See, there are five classes of koans. The first class is what you call the Hinayana koans, and the other four are the Mahayana koans. Hinayana is to reach nirvana. Mahayana is to come back and bring nirvana into the world as a bodhisattva. So once you get the great void, you see, there's nothing to catch on to. You are the universe. It doesn't matter whether you live or die. That's nirvana. All clinging to life, everything like that, you see then that it's hopeless. And you give it up, because not because you know you think you ought to give it up, because you know there is no way of catching it. There's nothing to catch hold of. There's no safety in the cosmos. So you just have to give up. Then, the next class of koans are such things as asking for miracles. In that class comes, take the four divisions of Tokyo out of your sleeve. Or stop the booming of a distant bell. Blow out a candle in Timbuktu. But as they go on in various ways, they are concerned with all kinds of problems and how Zen understanding deals with those problems, until we get in the end to the study of morality and rules of social and monastic life. That's the last thing. And the Zen way of understanding it.